You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thank you for listening to this Belly Up Sports Podcast Network product. Some said we go belly up, so we made it our name. And we're still here.
What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam. It's Thursday night, Kalal, and we are Atlanta's own, two Atlanta natives, recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports, wacky ass hijinks, and analysis, presented by Belly Up Sports. That's right, Adam. We've got a new podcast network that we've joined. They're not new. They've been around for a while.
Well, thanks a lot, Graham. I'm sick of the narratives, Waldrop. I really appreciate the intro, and as always, it's a pleasure to see your smiling face.
Always, yes.
So that's exciting news, Graham.
It is.
It's official, huh?
It is official.
Businessman John Galvin signed the papers and everything?
Yeah, got the paperwork over to us. We signed it. We're really thankful to Blaine and Mike for taking us on. I really appreciate it. It's a great podcast network. I heard about these guys. They have the two drunk brothers in a podcast show that I really like. So I was like, who hosts this? Or like, what are they, part of a network or something? Looking to Belly Up Sports. They're really cool. I'd look them up. They got articles, lots of podcasts, on pretty much any sport you can think of. So definitely check them out. We're really, really happy to be a part of the Belly Up family.
You know, just like the Falcons,
mm-hmm.
we kind of signed unexpectedly, you know, a couple weeks before the combine.
Yes.
So, you know, we were just following their lead.
Exactly. There's a lot of news going on in Atlanta sports, Adam, which is what is normally a dead period, right? A lot has happened in the last week. We lost Trey Young for probably the rest of the year, like a broken pinky.
And Okongwu's out.
And Okongwu's out for indefinitely. So that's a big blow for the Hawks. We got lots of things coming out of the combine so far. The Falcons have talked to Drake May and Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. And apparently, and I guess this is where we'll start, Zach Klein of WSB-TV, local Atlanta news station around these parts, has come out and said to Dukes and Bell today on the radio that Arthur Blank wants Kirk Cousins, no matter what. Do whatever you have to do. Doesn't matter what you have to pay. The quote is supposedly get it done. Now, Arthur Blank has not come out and said this. This is Zach Klein putting his feelers out there, finding this information out. So I guess take it a little bit with a grain of salt, but Zach Klein's a credible guy. It's not like Adam or I just coming up with a story and saying, we know this, and we don't know shit. Zach Klein is a guy in the know. He's the director of sports at WSB-TV. So, and he's at the combine right now. So.
I will say, I mean, you know my general take.
Rumors are bullshit.
Any rumors. But Zach Klein is one of the guys that generally is a little more in touch than at least any of the national guys.
Right. And this doesn't mean we've signed Kirk
but
Cousins.
But also, literally yesterday at this time, I saw the article, Justin Fields to Falcons rumors heating up. And there's videos of like Justin Fields getting all excited and someone saying, you're going home. And so like that was the thing yesterday. And then today, the headline is the exact same thing, but insert Kirk Cousins. So,
well, yeah, but no one was really saying anything. Like, this has a little more credibility. It's like, this is somebody
someone
saying,
said it.
This
it
is what Zach Klein is saying Arthur Blank has said, has instructed the front office to do. And we know Arthur Blank has done this in the past, like when he pursued Deshaun Watson.
To be clear, he said he is basically telling him. So his action, it's not like he has given them a directive.
It sounds like it. He said, get it done, according to Zach Klein. Like, that's the quote.
He said he is basically telling them, get it done.
Okay.
So
either way, it seems like that is the flavor of the day. If it happens, we don't know as of this recording of February 29th when we're recording this episode. However, you know, it came out yesterday that Kirk Cousins seems to want to go back to Minnesota, that and Minnesota wants him to come back. They're having very fruitful discussions, according to their general manager and team owner. So who knows what's going to happen there. But if the Vikings think he's going to take a hometown discount, and then the Falcons come up with some absurd offer, and we have a lot of cap space. I think we have like $30 million in cap space this year, or maybe more. And we just freed up $6 million by cutting Jonnu Smith this week. I'm sure he's going to go to the Steelers and join Arthur Smith again. But I'm just saying we're freeing up cap space. That was like the first kind of like, I wouldn't say it's a huge move, but it's the first noteworthy move, I would say, in the Raheem Morris era, where it's kind of shaping up like, okay, the Falcons are trying to get more cap space. So what are they doing? Something's brewing up in Flowery Branch.
I mean, look, I think I'm kind of doubling down on my take from last week about Justin Fields, where I'm very, very skeptical that he is the guy. Mm-hmm. And Mike Bell was kind of echoing me, of course. I'm sure you heard my take last week.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And he sounded pretty similar. He's like, you look at a lot of these other quarterbacks that, you know, haven't made it by year two or three, they're generally not going to make it. So, like,
but
just because we've seen Justin Fields have some really good games, specifically against us, we've also seen Desmond Ridder have some really good games. And, like, if you just look at one or two games, yeah.
But the talent's not could be great. There. Talent's not there for Ridder where it is for Fields.
But like, the decision-making's not there for
I disagree.
Fields.
I think if you look at the last 20 games, Fields is has a 62% completion rating, which isn't great, but he's thrown for 26 touchdowns and 14 interceptions. He's rushed for like 1,700 yards. Those numbers are very similar, or maybe 1,300, somewhere in that range. And those numbers are very similar with like 10 rushing touchdowns. Those numbers are very similar to what Lamar Jackson's done in the last 20 games. I'm just saying, like,
his numbers.
What I saw this year from Justin Fields is a million times better than what I saw in prior years. And a lot of that has to do with he went into a shit situation with a bad offensive line the first 2 years, horrible coordinators, no receivers. This year, he still started out kind of the same, but then once he came back from injury, DJ Moore and Cole Kmet woke up, and he had command over that offense, and they won games against good teams, and they beat the shit out of us. So I'm interested in him. I'm not saying like I want him over everybody, but I'm very interested in him based off what I saw. It's a little bit of a small sample size, but you get him in the right situation with the right coordinator, which we think Zach Robinson is, and you get him with Drake London, and hopefully Pitts is healthy, and Bijan, things could happen, man.
I don't have the stats in front of me, but I saw it earlier, but that's just how we do things on Atlanta's own, so I'm just going to go with what I remember seeing.
Yeah, of course.
And his stat line for last year was exactly the same as Marcus Mariota's stat line in Atlanta. Like, all the numbers were like, boom, right there. Very similar.
You're talking about like the entire year,
yeah.
Last year.
Correct.
Okay.
So, I don't know. That's scary. But Kirk Cousins is obviously a completely different situation.
He is. And he, let's say, you know, he got injured in like, what, week 7 or 8?
Yeah.
And at that point, he had thrown like 18 touchdowns and like 3 picks or something. Like, yeah, he was having an outstanding season.
Top five quarterback.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, Achilles injury. You know, those are very hard to come back from. He should be ready to go starting next season. He's also like 35, 36 years old.
I think he's 37, isn't he?
I'm not sure. And we're not going to look it up because that's just the way we do things here in Atlanta. So he's at least 35. So you're getting, I don't think he's 37. But either way, if you're going to go after Kirk Cousins, he's going to want a 5-year deal because think about it. That's just the way the NFL is today. Quarterbacks play into their late 30s, into some into their 40s. You know, we saw what Brady did. Obviously, he was an anomaly. Aaron Rodgers is 40. Kirk Cousins is in that. It's not like he's won a Super Bowl or had like a bunch of playoff success. But he's a very, like you said, last year he was probably top 5. And he's going to want a big-ass deal if he's going to leave Minnesota. And you just got to think about the ramifications of that, given you have a team that a lot of people say can win now. I'm not as convinced. But you have a team that can at least compete, right? You have a team that at least compete, and you're going to pretty much bank on winning a Super Bowl with a guy who's coming back from a ruptured Achilles and is 35 years old. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be upset, but I'd also question this front office again like I have over and over again because this is like the deepest, I don't know, it's like one of the deepest quarterback classes I've seen in some time, especially those top three. Like, I would move heaven and earth to get one of those top three, particularly, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Jaden Daniels, so I like him. But I would prefer to get the guy that's going to grow with you and be your franchise quarterback for the next, hopefully, 10-plus years, as opposed to getting a mercenary for hire who's a very good quarterback, but he's also coming off a ruptured Achilles.
Yeah, there's no perfect answer. especially like sitting at eight. But, you know, desperate teams make desperate moves.
And we have a desperate 81-year-old owner.
And that's certainly the situation we're in right now. And you look everywhere, like some of the huge mistakes. You got like Denver trading for freaking Russell Wilson. You got Cleveland trading for Deshaun Watson.
I'm so glad we dodged that bullet.
Because they were more desperate than we were. Right. So that's what's scary is like none of these scenarios are perfect sitting where we're at. Like I think any of the quarterbacks available at eight are not going to be those three guys that you mentioned.
No, so but like, you could move up.
To move up, that's going to, you know, cost a lot of assets in order to do that.
Right.
So that's the beauty of, it's like, well, say on theory, say we do have a team that could win within the next 3 years. All we're missing is a quarterback. If we can just spend money on a quarterback.
I don't think that's all you're missing, but that's the biggest piece you're missing.
And keep all your draft pieces. So, you know, continue to build through the draft. Right. It's decent.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you can get Justin Fields for a second round draft pick and that's ideal if he can be the guy. I just have my reservations with him as
sure.
well.
Sure. So that's understandable.
Either way, you got reservations anywhere you look. Yeah, the Achilles thing is terrifying. Look at Mike Soroka. Atlanta and Achilles
don't go together well.
Yeah. So, that would be so true to Atlanta. We signed him to 5-year. What's that quarterback contract nowadays? $350 million?
I don't know what it would be, but like I think Fields, you know, this would be going into his fourth year, and then you have his fifth-year option after that, so you're going to have to extend him probably for $250. Kirk, if he gets $250, Kirk's going to win at least three.
Because wasn't freaking, what's the kid in Arizona? Kyler Murray? Didn't he get like a $300 million?
Something like that. Something insane.
So that now that's the base, and he's, you know.
We got Mahomes as the base.
But oh, yeah. Well,
he got that super deal.
He doesn't count.
No, he's on another planet.
There's a base if you haven't won a Super Bowl.
Right. And there's a base if you won two at the time, now three.
Right. So
I don't know. It's just like every day you hear, like you were saying yesterday, it was Justin Fields. It was Terry Fontenot talking to Chicago. You know, we heard some people say that. No one that we really know of that, like a Zach Klein, but it's all over the place. Who knows what's going to happen? It's just the one thing that I do like about this offseason is there's so many questions to answer. You know, we went through the whole thing when the Matt Ryan era where it was like, okay, Mike Smith's fired. What are we going to do? Dan Quinn. Okay. Now Arthur Smith. And then it's like, now that we lost Matt Ryan and now that Arthur Smith's out, it's like we've had to answer two huge questions this offseason, head coach and quarterback. And now we've got the head coach that I think we feel pretty decent about overall. And now it comes down to the quarterback, and something that Raheem Morris said when he was at the combine before he left the other day was that, you know, if the quarterback situation was solved, I'd probably not stand in here. Like, if they had figured it out, I wouldn't be here. I mean, he's pretty much said that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very telling. I mean, we all know that, but the fact that he said that just says more about how genuine Raheem is.
I did think it was kind of cool that he, you know, he wasn't there the whole time at all. Like, right. You know, Arthur Smith was there the entire time looking over Fontenot's back.
Yeah, and so that's something that Sean McVay does in LA, and I think that Raheem probably learned that. It's like you go for a little bit, then let your scouts scout.
Yeah, kind of deal. Exactly. So we'll see, man. I do know that, like, you know, in that Fields article, they were saying like this is something that I could see as truth. Where, you know, last year the Bears were in the same situation with the number one pick, and they made the trade back,
mm-hmm.
and that happened like the Friday before free agency starts, which I think is next Friday.
Yeah.
So something could happen within the next week legitimately.
Yeah, and these deals...
At least with... It's not necessarily Fields coming here, but going somewhere, that's going to, you know, lead to a lot of answers for us.
There could be something in place as soon as tomorrow. You just might not hear about it until next week or week after or something. Like, that's... I mean, these teams are all dealing with each other.
Yeah.
Even though the official league year hasn't started, you know, that's just the way it is. So we're going to know pretty soon. I would be surprised, though, if Fields and Cousins do not come here, or one of them doesn't come here, or what I'm trying to say is if both of them don't come here, then what do you do? Do they get desperate and move up to three or two or whatever to try and take, you know, one of those three big three quarterbacks, and then also, is there a trade partner out there that would do that? Will the Patriots do that? Will the Commanders do that? The Bears sure as hell ain't going to give up number one. I don't think that's going to happen. mean, they fleeced Carolina last year to get that pick, and they're not going to give it up. So are the Commanders willing to trade? I don't think so. They need a franchise quarterback. Are the Patriots willing to trade? Maybe. But it's a big maybe. So I kind of get why, to a degree, that Arthur Blank is like, go get Kirk Cousins. That's probably our best chance given our draft position and probably the lack of willingness for the potential trade partners to want to trade with us.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe he signs a 3-year deal. That's a little less scary than 5. But
right.
Depends on what the market is.
They might set the market, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows we need a quarterback. Like, it's not a secret. It's not something we're keeping close to our chest. I mean, they said it in the press conferences. You know, Arthur Blank and Rich McKay said it. Then when Raheem got hired, Raheem and Terry both said it. And they're saying it again at the Combine. So it's like everybody knows we are very desperate for a quarterback.
What do you think about this? We trade for Fields.
Okay.
Highest is giving up a second-round pick this year.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. No first-round picks this year or next year. We keep number 8. And at 8, we draft either the kid from Michigan.
J.J. McCarthy.
Or Penix.
Okay.
And then we've got 1 year to see what Fields is and develop McCarthy or Penix under him. Right? And then you either have a trade asset in a young, controllable quarterback, or you have got your next quarterback.
Yeah. That's interesting, too, because there would sort of be this 2-year window to make that happen before you have to decide on anything with Fields.
And they're battling each other.
Right, they're pushing each other. It's an interesting idea. It sort of chips all in on the quarterback position overall. The only thing, well, there's many things. Well, one, I don't like McCarthy. And two, I'm worried about Penix's injury history. But I kind of like where your head's at. At the same time, I really want to take a defensive end at 8.
I really want
Dallas Turner or someone like that.
It makes more sense to do that, but get a quarterback in like the 3rd round.
Again, well, we've done that before.
Well, third round and later quarterbacks do develop, so.
They can.
There's more people you like.
Yeah. I mean, Ritter was a 3rd round pick, so you know that turned out.
I still think he could develop.
Okay. I don't at this point. Especially after our conversation with him. If you guys haven't heard that, especially new listeners, go back a couple weeks to listen to our interview with Desmond Ritter. It's pretty exciting and interesting, I would say. Really eye-opening stuff.
Poor Des. Like, they talked about him a couple times in the media this week. Just be like, no, we're keeping Des in the loop. Like, we're excited to work with him. Are you really going to work with him?
I don't know. Probably not.
Maybe backup.
I wonder one thing, though, about the backup quarterback position. You have Heinicke under contract. You have Ritter under contract. I think you would save more, or you get more money to the cap if you cut Heinicke now.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you think Heinicke's gone?
I would think so. Although he is the veteran. I mean, it depends, right?
Yeah.
If we draft a rookie, you want Heinicke as the backup.
Right.
A veteran to learn from. But if we get Kirk Cousins, get rid of Heinicke and have Ritter back him up.
That's scary, man. We're one re-injured Achilles away from Desmond Ritter potentially stepping back in if it's Cousins.
Hell yeah. Ritter. Yeah.
That's scary shit. Another funny thing that happened this week with the Falcons, or just overall the NFL Players Association released all their grades for everything, like coaches, training facilities, strength and conditioning coaches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Arthur Smith got like a C+, I think, overall in his review, which I think was 3rd worst in the entire league. And it wasn't just people that were a part of the Falcons. This was like a league-wide thing. So everybody's voting on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was very telling that he got a C+.
What were there like different categories?
No, just like overall, like your opinion of this coach from top to bottom.
Yeah.
Personality, scheme, et cetera, et cetera. C+. And I think the only other people that were worse were Ron Rivera and Josh McDaniel.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Poor Arthur.
I have no sympathy for the guy.
That's why.
And you know what? I bet, like, because he was such a prick all the time in press conferences and stuff. I'm sure he was the same way to the players.
I don't know. We've rehashed that a million times.
We have.
But he's in Pittsburgh. He's not our problem anymore.
No, he's not. I just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
It was just like one final twist of the knife to Arthur's time here in Atlanta.
It does feel like the era has ended like pretty suddenly. Do we need more time to mourn?
No, I don't need time to mourn. I have enough time being pissed off at the guy for running jet sweeps to the now departed Jonnu Smith at the goal line.
How many games do you give Raheem until you're like livid at him? If we start off 0-3, are you done?
I'm not done necessarily. It's like context is king. It's like the Falcons lost so many games last year where they had it and they just gave it away, which we've done our entire franchise, but it was just so infuriating the way we're doing it now. We're just putting Ridder in all these bad situations to throw the ball when he didn't need to. So if we're doing stuff like that and we're putting our players in bad positions and we're losing games because of that, then I'm going to be pissed off. If it's a thing where it's like it's a close game and we lost on a last-second field goal, so be it. You know, it's just sometimes you just
get really unlucky. That was all of our games, though.
But they were like, think about the Commanders game. Ridder throws four picks and throws a red zone interception and loses the game. The Panthers game away, where you know we could just run the ball and kick a field goal.
Last minute field goal we lost on.
But he threw a pick that led to that. It's just like what leads to last second field goal.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. It's like those led to, you know, you losing the game, regardless of how you lost the game. That you were the inciting incident.
Sure.
I do not want to be the inciting incident to losses. I want to say we both played, it was a good game, we lost, so be it. So it just depends on how Raheem loses games. In terms of my sort of factor of evaluating him as a coach.
Yeah.
Not the only thing, but that's a big thing. That's one of the big reasons why I was so anti-Arthur Smith last year, just the way we lost.
Yeah, it's funny, like, the grace period that you give a coach, like, you start off all optimistic, but it'll turn at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Dan Quinn started 5-0 his first year, and then we wound up 8-8. You know, we thought we were going to the playoffs.
I forgot about that. That's brutal.
Yeah. It was like, holy shit, we look great. And then, you know, the next year, I think we started like 1-2. I remember we were at Corner Tavern watching the Tampa Bay game. We looked like dog shit. And I was like, this is going to be another terrible year. And then we wind up going to the Super Bowl and we know what happened after that. But it was, you know, it's just so weird how like early in the season things can seem off. Like the Chiefs seemed pretty off last year. Then they just hit their stride in the playoffs and kicked everyone's ass.
Yeah. So. We just never hit our stride.
No, we never hit our stride.
We're never that hot team.
No. That's sort of the flow of the show if you're new to it. It's kind of like we talk about things and we realize how screwed Atlanta is for the most part in terms of at least our football and basketball team.
Yeah, we kind of just...
The Braves are, you know, we're usually pretty positive about even though I'm kind of hard on them just because I expect more in the postseason. But overall, that's like our bastion, our savior is the Atlanta Braves. Keeps us sane as sports fans, I would say.
Well, you know... What if this year they suck, though?
That would be horrible, because the Hawks aren't very good. The Falcons are a big question mark. So if the Braves suck, if it blows up where it's like Sale goes down to injury, Free goes down to injury, Morton goes down to injury, I'm going to sit here and say, I told you so, to Alex Anthopoulos. But hopefully that doesn't happen.
All right, let's talk Braves then, since he started it there.
Talk Braves. Okay. Actually, before we talk Braves, Adam, let's take a quick break and hear a word from our new sponsor.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Hey, everyone. It's Ryan from No Credentials Required to talk to you about one of our newest partners at Belly Up Sports, SeatGeek. Yeah, live sports is great on television, but the feeling of being at the arena is a priceless experience. That's why our friends at SeatGeek are there to help you find the best tickets at the best prices. Not only can you get tickets to sporting events, but you can also get tickets to concerts, comedy shows, musicals, and more. Search for your desired event now at SeatGeek.com, enter promo code BellyUpSports at checkout, and you save $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek. Life's an event. We have the tickets.
All right, Adam, we're back. What are you drinking today, young man?
Sweetwater IPA, Grant.
Oh, very good.
What about you?
Drinking some Coquito out of season. It's a fantastic Puerto Rican drink introduced to me by your wife, my friend, Veronica.
Yes, yes.
And she mixed it up during the championship weekend, AFC championship, NFC championship, and it stayed good. And it's a rum-based drink, as you know. And it is fantastic. It's hitting the spot right now.
Yeah,
on a very cold day. It's a heavy drink. It's great for a cold day.
Yeah, it's a staple of the Puerto Rican culture and the Graham culture.
Yes. I think about it at least.
You just look so happy.
I am.
Just talking about it.
I love it. It's so damn tasty.
You ever try, I mean,
and it's not too sweet either.
You can't order that at a bar, right?
I think you can if you go to the right place, but I don't know of a place that serves it.
There's like a couple Puerto Rican spots.
Yeah. Oh, please continue.
I don't have any on the top of my head, but I know they exist in
sure.
the city.
Yeah.
I know there was a place that was more of just like a food truck, mm-hmm. so I doubt they would have Coquito, but I'm sure it's out there.
Yeah, it's so good. If you want to make it, look it up. It's very easy. Just get a lot of white rum.
And remember the coco leche.
Yeah.
Es muy importante.
It is very muy importante. So Adam made a batch near the holidays, which is when you normally have it, and he jacked that up, and it did not taste very well. Very well, very good.
Yeah, I didn't know it was so crucial.
Yeah, and so I was like, we got to have redemption, yeah. And we did.
Here we go.
Here we go. And like, we got redemption on Coquito. The Braves are looking for redemption heading into the 2024 season, and they're off to a very good start in spring training. Michael Harris is hitting home runs like there's no tomorrow. Chris Sale looked great in his first start. Two innings, I think.
Four Ks, I think.
I think he threw 16 strikes to like seven balls or something.
96, 97.
Throwing 96, 97. Striders,
hell yeah.
Strider's looking good with the curveball. Everything's going according to plan. No one's injured yet. So, liking what we're seeing in spring training. It's obviously very easy to overreact to spring training, but I think, you know, when you're looking at guys like Chris Sale, someone who has been very injury-prone the last 4 or 5 years, and who are you're putting a lot of faith into, honestly. You brought him here, and then you extended him 2 more years. He needs to show up and be the Chris Sale that we know he can still be. And even though it's just a spring training start and everybody's getting their feet under them, it was very encouraging to see the velocity and see the efficiency in his first start in spring training.
So the Chris Sale trade, that was Grissom. Was the,
yeah, Von Grissom.
Was it just straight up?
It was straight up.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any draft picks or anything.
I've already started doing that. I'm following box scores for the Red Sox to see what Grissom's doing. I'm checking out the White Sox to see if Soroka's doing anything.
The whole, any Braves cast off is pretty much on the White Sox.
Yeah, Jesse Chavez is over there.
Right.
But, no, it's great. I mean, we're, what, a week into spring training at this point?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, that was a huge, huge, huge sign to see him come out looking so strong. And I know he... You know, it's got to be such a relief for him to get that first one over with. But yeah, dude, if he's an ace, like, are you kidding me? Like, I mean, we're bringing him in to be our three,
right?
Four, maybe. But if he pitches like an ace, that's going to mean the world.
And if Fried is healthy, and if you got Strider, Sale, and Fried in some order, and that's what you're going into the postseason with, and they're all pitching to the peak of their powers, that is a terrifying rotation. And you gotta love Sale particularly. The big lefty power arm coming in against Bryce Harper. Because you know we're going to see those assholes again.
Saw them yesterday. Tied them. 7-7.
There were so many games this year, or not this year, but last year with the Phillies, where in the regular season, it's just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And you never felt comfortable ever with those guys. Even though we won the season series, it was always... very back and forth, and I was nervous going into it, and the nervousness was justified.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely our arch nemesis going into this year. You look at, you know, the Mets are kind of resetting a little bit, so they're, you know, they traded off all their big names.
They're not a factor.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Marlins, I'm not going to be scared of them for a while until they prove it.
Right, and the Nationals are in a perpetual rebuild, it seems.
Yeah.
It's down to us and Philly.
It's got to be us and the Phillies, right?
Unless the Mets come out of nowhere. I mean, stranger things have happened.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I agree. It's us versus Philly again for the division and beyond. So, I still think it was very fluky that they lost to Arizona. I'm really glad they lost to Arizona, but, you know, they looked primed to go to the World Series again, and I'm glad they didn't. But
yeah, I've never hate-watched a series like that one, man. Like,
oh, me too. I watched one of the games with Philly John at Barstool, at Brewhouse, and... I walked in, and the first thing I said was, "Go D-backs," and he goes, "Fuck you, Graham." Like I was just messing around, but he was just so, you know, how serious he takes his Philly sports and sports in general.
And, I mean, you made it pretty clear after the Braves series that you hate the Phillies with a passion, so.
Yeah, and I'm glad that the rivalry's back. I'm not happy with the outcome, but I'm glad the rivalry's back. And I go as far to say it's not a rivalry. It's very one-sided right now when it actually comes down to games that matter. They are our daddy.
That's 2 years in a row.
It sucks.
It sucks.
And you lost in the same way. Shitty pitching, bad pitching depth, no offense. And that's one of the reasons that Anthopoulos went out and got Chris Sale, power pitcher, left-hander. One of the reasons he went and got so many guys that are flamethrowers in the bullpen. You know, it's like people we didn't have the last couple of years. Tyler Matzek's also back, which I'm really excited about. I hope he comes back and is the beast we all know he can be. Even if he doesn't, they should still build a statue to him outside Truist Park. That was the greatest inning of baseball ever pitched that I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's had a couple spring training appearances so far.
Seems to be fine.
Looks strong. I saw, you know, I like looking at the guys on the fringe of the roster. You know, that's especially for a team as established as the Braves are right now. Like, that's where our battles are, on right. the fringe. And Ken Giles, who's the guy that we signed maybe a month ago, that we've talked about once or twice on the show. He's the ex-Houston Astros stud closer, pitched for the Phillies for a long time.
And
the
Blue Jays, too.
Blue Jays, yeah. Coming back from injury for a few years now. And he had his first appearance yesterday, one inning pitched, 3 Ks, no runs. Obviously, it's spring training, but shoot, he's another guy. If he's throwing 96, 97 again, it's going to be tough to keep him out of your bullpen, despite how stacked it is.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's really good news. But all these things can change. I remember last year we were freaking out about Jared Schuster and Dodd. They're having the best springs of anybody. And it's like, well, we've got to put them in the rotation. And they're going to, maybe they'll be big factors in the season. They did make some starts. They ate up some innings, especially when Kyle Wright and Max Fried went down. But they were not, you know, factors overall in terms of how the season played out.
At the end of the day, spring stats do not matter. You're right, Graham. But
it's still encouraging.
It's still promising.
It's encouraging, especially with guys like Giles, who's fighting for a spot. A guy like Chris Sale, who has a lot to prove, it's good to see these early results.
Who out of, like, the regular guys, like the pitchers we've seen last year,
mm-hmm.
any of, like, the top eight regulars that we have, like, what are you hoping to see improvement out of any of those guys?
I want to see Spencer Strider take it to another level. I really want to see more from that breaking pitch. I want to see him. And this is a guy who's hard on himself, who's apparently the most analytical son of a bitch in the world, and really want, like, he's the one who came into spring training saying, like, it's unacceptable if we don't win the World Series this year, which I loved. I want to see him go to another level. I do not think he's a finished product by any stretch of the imagination. I want to see if he can mix his pitches a little better between the fastball, slider, changeup, and now the new curveball. I really want to see him work on that pitch. That's really important. I want to see Fried just go out there and do his thing. I don't need him to do anything where he's vastly improved, because I think he is who he is at this point. But I want to see him healthy. I want to see good movement on his pitches. Those are the two guys I'm watching, even though they're not our most proven rotation pieces. Obviously, like, Charlie Morton's been in the league for a million years. Chris Sale's been in the league for a while. But those are the two guys that I put my hopes on for this regular season in terms of the rotation. I want to see them, like I said, Strider, continue to develop that curveball and mix your pitches better, and I want to see Free just do his thing and be healthy.
I'm going to go on the other side of the field, Graham. Matt Olson.
Okay.
Amazing offensively last year, right?
Yeah, you know, 55 home runs or something?
I was going to say in the 40s, but you're right. He was in the 50s. Just a ridiculous amount of home runs, yeah. Ridiculous amount of RBIs.
Insane on-base plus slugging percentage.
He was great. Defense could improve.
Yeah.
Like, he was kind of touted as, like, you know, a gold glover when he came over here, and he's been far from that. So yeah. I think that's an area that he could improve.
Sure.
That would certainly help us a lot.
The weirdest thing about Olson is, like, the drop balls on just assists, like someone throwing from short to first or second to first. It's like he's had multiple drops over the last couple of years where you're like, that just doesn't happen for a major league first baseman.
I want to see. So, Matty O, tighten it up.
On the D.
The D. Ozzie, let's finally cut these strikeouts out, you know?
And walk a little bit more.
Yeah,
that'd be nice.
Like your boy Ronnie's been doing the last couple of years.
Especially last year.
Where he's completely changed his offensive game and stopped striking out. Ozzie, it's your turn.
And Ozzie has it's just the crazy thing about the majority of these Braves players is they're all in their, like, mid-20s.
Yeah.
They are not done.
They're still developing.
Better. Like, Acuna could be even better this year.
That's
Ozzie
a great point,
could easily
Graham.
Be better. Yes. Riley, Olsen, like, all these guys.
So there's small steps that we could see these guys take. Like, we've seen that progression in Acuna. It's time to see that in Ozzie.
Yeah.
And Sean Murphy, if he can be the Sean Murphy that he was the first 2 months of the season.
Oh, my God.
Let's give him 75% of the starts at catcher. Like, let's see him take that next step as well. Like,
especially from an offensive standpoint.
There's no eyes on him offensively. Like, he's kind of like Jared Kelenic. Yes.
He made a really nice catch the other
day. Like, not a lot of pressure on you with these other guys around you. So, like, no one's watching you, Sean. Don't worry. Like, we love your defense, but if he could be a legit cleanup hitter consistently.
Or just a five. Yeah. Whatever, wherever he bats.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Like, if he...
Throw Ozuna at four. Like, that guy loves
Ozuna
that.
Ozuna should stay at four until he proves that
he loves it.
I mean, Ozuna hit 40 home runs last year. He had a great year. Like, Ozuna should be four until he screws up. Until he, like, falls on his face like he did, you know, in 2021 and 2022.
Right.
Murphy, I agree. I mean, you look at his stats after the All-Star game. He was hitting, like, .175, like... the last 3 months of the season.
I think he was hurt, wasn't he?
If he was hurt, nothing came out. But he was like ghost offensively. He was awful. And Darnell was awful offensively the second half of the year. It's something that no one talked about, you know, when you had Olsen doing his thing. It was Zuna, Riley, Acuna. You know, it was lost on us once Sean Murphy started to decline. It was just kind of like, no one really, we talked about it, but a lot of other people really didn't talk about it. No one listens to us. But I'm just saying, it's like, it was so frustrating because like once it got to playoff time, automatic out. I mean, he was an automatic out like the rest of that season, but particularly in the playoffs, that was glaring. Whereas like every time Sean Murphy came up, he played two games and Darno played two games because he was so bad offensively.
Yeah.
And you can't, once you get to the playoffs, you got to have your guy at catcher. You can't have just someone who's an albatross back there offensively. I mean, you can, but it was just because he did so well in that first half of the season. I was so disappointed to see how his season concluded.
So we're looking for consistency.
Offensively from Sean Murphy.
The best offense in baseball, we can still improve.
Yes, and I think that's something we can't lose sight of and the Braves can't lose sight of. It's like, no matter how good you are, you can always be better, and you really can't say anything until you win the championship again. You really can't. You really can't say, oh, we hit the zenith. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah, don't just rest on your laurels. Is that a phrase?
And that's something that I'm really looking... Here's the biggest thing that needs to happen, Adam. Maybe not in spring training, but just overall, and something we talked about a couple weeks ago. Killer mentality going into the playoffs. I think the tone has been set in spring training by saying it's World Series or bust. Multiple guys are coming out there saying that. We need to hold ourselves accountable as a team. That is the goal. And all this regular season shit is nice, but it doesn't matter if you lose in the division series. I mean, I remember throughout the whole year last year, we were compared to that Minnesota Twins team that hit 307 home runs. But you know what happened to them? They lost in the first round. No one gives a shit about them. Mm-hmm. The true legends, the people that you remember win championships, and this team is too good not to do it again.
I'm picturing you after... Strider gave a similar speech at his press conference. It's like, I don't know if you would like go before Strider or after Strider, but then Spencer gives his speech and then you, all right, now here's what I think we're going to do.
It's a problem. Mine would probably just be a regurgitation. I'm probably regurgitating a lot of shit he said.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Because Spencer gets it.
He gets it. He actually goes out there and
plays.
You
get it, Graham, and Spencer gets it.
Yeah, him and his massive quads get it a hell of a lot more than I do. I can just speak to it as a fan, the frustration I felt. And the thing I love seeing and hearing from this team is just like no more of this aw shucks mentality if it doesn't go your way in the playoffs. Take some responsibility, say it's unacceptable and we got to do better. And I love seeing that because the whole thing in the last 25 years of this franchise has been, the playoffs are a crapshoot. You never know what's going to happen. But we've had too many times where we just lose in the first round and we lose looking like dog shit when we look so good the whole year. I'm so tired of that. And it's the reason why, you know, everyone said the Braves were the team of the 90s. They really weren't. We won one World Series. Won four National League titles, which is great, but you couldn't close the door. We had three Hall of Famers as your top three starting rotation, and a future Hall of Famer, and your third baseman was a Hall of Famer. Your center fielder, Andrew Jones, should be a Hall of Famer. It's like you had so many great players, even beyond the Hall of Fame players. And you couldn't get it done more than once. It's just infuriating. So the Yankees were the team of the 90s.
Do you think when you're like 80 years old, you'll still be upset about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll still be upset about the Super Bowl. Even if the Falcons win like four Super Bowls, by the time I die, I'll still go back, you know, we should have five.
Yeah. I don't know what that says about you. I think just passionate.
I'm passionate. I always want more. Particularly from this Braves organization.
Never satisfied.
No, the way that Alex Anthopoulos has set this up is like, it's such a dream scenario. Dynasty should be our middle name.
So that's interesting. It would, like, you know, 90s happen. I know you think you remember everything about them, but not to this extent, right?
No, like, obviously.
You didn't have a weekly Atlanta sports podcast back in the 90s.
No, I did not.
But, like, this is like being in the middle of it, you know? We have one World Series.
Yes.
We are set up for success for multiple years.
Right.
And it would be super disappointing if we don't win any except that one.
Yeah.
So I get it. And, yeah, like we are literally in the middle of that right now. Like, we're in window. I think we won before we expected to, right?
Yes.
So now we're in, like, 93, 94 right now?
Maybe.
Because
The Braves won when they should have. Yeah, right. Right. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
So, like, you know, our window, we'll say 2021 was 1991.
Okay.
So that's when it started.
All right.
So we're not even in the middle of it. We're at the beginning.
We're at the beginning of it, which is okay. I like where your head's at there.
Yeah.
And that's another thing.
10 years.
Right. And that's another thing, too.
And if we only win one, that's terrible.
It sucks. But I will say this, even the Braves teams that didn't win at all, there were still multiple teams in the 90s. You know, we won four National League titles. That's still, you're still making, you're doing damage in the playoffs. Like, I just wanted to, like, I do want to win multiple championships, but I also want to do damage. I do not want to lose in the first round when you win 100 games.
That's
every
true.
Year. Like, yeah, that's just infuriating.
Like, yeah, this first round stuff, this is the end of that window. This is 2002, 2003, right. 2004, 2005, 2006.
Well, we didn't go to the playoffs in 2006, but I get your point.
Oh, yeah, we sucked in 2007.
Yeah,
and
6.
Sorry, 2005 was Baby Braves.
That was
last,
Baby Braves.
Last one.
And that was kind of like,
was fun.
Okay.
That was the end.
Right.
But anywho, one thing I am concerned about this year, Graham.
Mm.
Loss of leadership. I'm worried about losing Ron Washington.
Ah, I was about to say players. Like, we didn't really lose anybody.
Even Eric Young Sr.
Okay.
Like, I know we've replaced Ron Washington with Tuiaso Sopo.
Right.
Who was the Gwinnett Braves manager, longtime player for them.
Yeah, former Braves player, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and, like, no one, like, and of course, people only have good things to say about them. That's how these things work. But obviously, he does not have the experience that Ron Washington has. Now, fortunately, we still have Snit. We still have Walt Weiss. Right. We still have Cranny.
Right.
So that's great. But Ensitzer. So it's not like we lost our pitching or hitting coach.
No.
But still, like, that's a lot of experience in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And the fielding side of things. So I am, you know, I think that's a concern.
It's a little bit of a concern, but I think that, I mean, you think about the infielders, right, that have been around Ron Washington, like Albies and Riley in particular, that have been around Ron Washington for a long time, longer than anyone else in the infield. And I think the way that Wash had them do things is instilled in them. And I'm not really concerned about him leaving and then that sort of MO fading.
But he could have been a big part of the culture.
Yeah, no doubt he was. But, you know, you've got to find a way to overcome that. But I agree, it is a bit of a concern. I'm not, one thing I won't miss is Ron Washington being over aggressive as a third base coach, although that simmered down the last couple of years, which I appreciated. But yeah, you're right. It's a big loss, especially fundamentally. So you just hope that what he has imparted on the players remains. But in terms of the everyday presence, you're right. That is a big hole to fill. And who knows how they're going to do it.
I don't know. As a fan, there's nothing more exciting than Ron Washington like doing a ridiculous send that you're like 100% sure is not going to work
and
out.
It works out.
And then it works out. And then he just stands there with his arms crossed, cold-blooded.
Right. You know, like,
that's tough to beat.
Yeah, it's like, I did that.
That brings a smile to my face.
Yeah. He will be missed. I'm sure he is missed down there right now. That's really it for the Braves. I guess we got to talk some Hawks. And I don't know, Adam. The Hawks don't look good right now. They're down 34-16 at the end of the first quarter against the Nets.
Oh, no.
But it's been interesting watching this team without Trey. I went to the game on Sunday against Orlando where the Hawks won pretty handily. By the way, it's something like close to 20-point victory, if not 20-point victory. They destroyed the Jazz the other night. There's a caveat, so the Jazz have been in a bit of a tailspin, and the Magic were missing Paolo Banchero, their best player. But it's weird watching this Hawks team without Trey function. Like, DeJounte is in full control of the team. He's the point guard. Almost had a triple-double in that Magic game. He looked great. Jalen Johnson looked fantastic. He had, like, 21 points, 15 boards, like, 8 assists or something. He was flirting with a damn triple-double. And it was weird watching them coexist. Like, they really coexisted well together. They collaborated well together. They had their specific roles. I think the problem with the Hawks team watching them with Trey and DeJounte on the floor at one, you know, at the same time, it's just like whoever has the ball is in control and the other guy's kind of almost useless.
Yeah.
But when it's the DeJounte and Jalen out there together as like sort of the one and two options, they really complement each other well. The Hawks played better defense. They forced like 4 shot clock violations. They were holding the Magic to like 40% shooting from the field. Again, like they didn't have their best player and that limited them. And we were getting beat up on the inside a little bit by Franz Wagner and Devin Mitchell Jr. But there's a Wendell. I can't remember his name. Whoever their center is.
Is it really Franz Wagner?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, really good. Really good.
German composer, I assume?
Yeah, German composer is playing power forward for the Magic now.
Got it.
So you still had some issues like that, but overall, I liked seeing that version of the Hawks. They kind of slowed it down. It was a lower scoring game. And
I mean, back-to-back games holding them under 100 points, that is unheard of.
Unheard of. Like we said.
We give up 125 and hope to score 130.
Right. But like we said, you know, Magic are missing their best player. The Jazz are in a bit of a tailspin. They lost like 5 of the last 6. But it was encouraging to see. The Hawks were playing really good defense in both those games. Obviously, that's not happening tonight against Brooklyn. And you still shouldn't get your hopes up for anything. But it was like there was a different mentality from the team. There's more of a commitment to play defense. It's been interesting to watch. And I haven't watched any of the Brooklyn game, obviously, tonight. But even just a 2-game sample size, I'm like, this is a totally different team without Trey. And it doesn't make you wonder, like, are the Hawks better without Trey? I'm not saying that. But in terms of do Trey and DeJounte work together, I say no, definitively, after watching DeJounte play without Trey this year. Not just the last 2 games, but just over the course of the season when Trey's missed some time.
Yeah, there was like a 5-game stretch earlier as well.
Yeah, like it was a game in January where we went down to Miami and beat the Heat, and DeJounte made this last-second shot to beat them. And it was, again, it was like a lower-scoring game. Better defense was played. It was like, it was just a weird, it was just like a completely alternative version of the Hawks where they actually like gave a shit about defense. It wasn't like the greatest defense in the world still, but it was better than what you get usually on a night-to-night basis.
I think there's also just like, there's got to be like a mindset where you have like a dynamic scorer like Trae Young on your team. The other players feel like second fiddle and don't feel like they need to step up like they do when they're shorthanded like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting to watch. And it's really like we get a 20-game sample size of what the team looks like without Trae. Like, we don't care about this season. We know we're not going anywhere. But you get to see what we look like without him. We get to give our first-round pick, Kobe Bufkin, a look.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I think... You know, I think he could be a dynamic scorer. All reports are that, like, he has no problem, like, one-to-one defense, you know?
Yeah, he looked good the game I was at. I was like, okay.
I think he was, like, a +7 mm-hmm. in that game. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's great to hear. Like, on the year, like, with Trey and DeJounte on the court, they're, like, -118 or something. That's not good.
No. No, it's not.
That's not good. So, like, we get to see, are we better with Trey or are we better without Trey, but with the assets we would get from trading him, you know?
Yeah, I kind of see where your head's at.
So, like, if we look competitive without Trey, like, take that and add a first-round pick plus probably a young player, you know?
Right. I'd like to see how they do against a really good team without Trey or multiple good teams without Trey.
Well, surely we play someone good over the next 20 games.
Yes, we will. But, you know, tonight you're getting your ass kicked by Brooklyn, who sucks.
Early,
but you only scored 16 points in the first quarter. Was this a high school game? Like, come on. Brooklyn does play decent defense, though, so maybe that's what's happening.
Yeah.
I was checking a lot of the player props today, and, like, a lot of the lines were really low, and, like, Jalen Johnson and DeJounte, I was like, why is it so low? And I looked it up, and I was like, oh, Brooklyn actually plays decent defense. So I guess that's what's happening tonight up there in Brooklyn. But my point being, you want to see – you're exactly right. You want to see how this team functions over 20-plus games without Trey. And then I think you've got to make the decision about what you do with Trey and DeJounte in the offseason. You can't keep both of them. It just doesn't work. You got to get rid of at least one because together you're in the play-in tournament. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is the most interesting thing that's happened to the Hawks all year. The fact that we do get to, like, the sample size to see what the future could look like. We get to see a young rookie play. I read an article, I'm sure it was on The Athletic, because that's where I get all my sports news from. It's now.
The only website for sports information for Adam.
Yes.
There's nowhere else he could possibly look.
I might have to break this Twitter ban at some point, like once the Braves start up. But I'm going to hold strong for a few more weeks anyways. Okay. But it was a great article. They rarely write about the Hawks because we don't have a Hawks beat writer anymore because they're slashing salaries left and right. Because that's the way things go nowadays at startups, Graham. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
But they're talking about essentially how like Landry Fields and Kyle Korver so far have just been like two scared boys as GMs and have literally done nothing. Like,
good point. Yeah. They extended DeJounte and that's about it.
We've extended our own players, but like we've signed like Patty Mills, who was just cut, just like a bunch of old washed up veterans. Like at the trade deadline, we did nothing,
which was so stupid.
And now we have zero depth. Bruno Fernando, who's been playing pretty well, is our only center.
Yeah.
That was like a trade last year. Like,
well, he's not our only center, but he's our backup center now.
But Capella's out.
Capella's still playing.
He's back.
Capella's back.
Okay.
Capella's been playing since like last Thursday or something.
Sorry, mentioned on The Athletic.
Well, yeah.
But the point is, like, zero depth.
No.
So that's why we have to play Wesley Matthews. Like,
he's playing so much now.
Yeah.
It's like, geez.
It's bad. Like, they're scared to do anything because they don't know what to do. Because, I mean, it's like, I don't know what to do. Do you know what to do?
Yeah, I know what to do.
Brother, shut up. Exactly. I'll start
you
over.
You get rid of every single piece that is tradable that isn't Jalen Johnson. You get rid of, and I'm not saying like Jalen Johnson's like your franchise cornerstone. He has been playing exceptional basketball recently, but you know, you got to get rid of Trey. You got to get rid of DeJounte. You got to get rid of Bogdanovich. You got to get rid of Capella. Like, you got to get rid of all those guys, accrue draft picks, just a crew draft.
If you get drafted, stock it up. Sure, here's the problem. Don't want to blow it up because we have no draft picks for the next 3 years.
That's why you got to trade guys to get those draft picks.
But who is going to want to take on good players?
Well, I would tell you
good
this.
Teams.
There's the thing that I'm pissed off about the most, and I think we talked a little bit about this last week or maybe the week before, is that you didn't trade Bogdanovich, who is a viable player who could help a contender for sure off the bench. As a three-point specialist, you didn't trade Capella, who could help as a guy who gets a lot of rebounds. Those were guys you could trade and get something for. Waiting till the offseason to do anything of those guys is not going to increase their value, I don't think.
In fairness, we don't know what was offered.
Maybe it was dog shit.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
It's like, it's just so frustrating to just do nothing. Hear nothing.
We're just so.
There's no plan. There's no.
We're
no
just so stuck in the middle right now.
Yeah, and it's the worst place to be as an NBA franchise.
So let's hope Bufkin is like a stud with Jalen Johnson. Then one of DeJounte or Trey, trade the other, get a couple draft picks, a young guy, and then let's see what we got.
Yeah,
that's your best case scenario. I think
that's horrible if that's our best case scenario. But you're kind of. I'm not saying you're wrong, but. You might be right, which is frustrating. Oh, well, that's life as a Hawk, especially a Hawks fan. The Hawks, for anyone who's new to the podcast, are definitely the worst franchise in our city.
I don't think they need
overall,
to just be...
Historically.
I don't think they need to be new to the podcast to know that. Oh, no, the Falcons are pretty terrible historically.
But the Falcons at least have won two NFC championships. You know how many Eastern Conference titles the Hawks have won?
Zero.
Yeah. So there you go. You know how relevant the Falcons have been in the last 20 years? You can at least say the Mike Vick era was relevant. Many aspects of the Matt Ryan era were even more relevant. And then the Dirty Bird. What do you got with the Hawks? You got Dominique.
Dominique Wilkins era, that very relevant.
Yeah, but you still didn't get to the Eastern Conference. You didn't even get to the Eastern Conference Finals at that point. And you had the 2014-15 team, which was just team basketball beautiful. And that only got to the Eastern Conference Finals. And then you had the 2021 team that also went to the Eastern Conference Finals and was a Trae Young ankle injury away from maybe making the finals.
Maybe that's all
you got. You had three like two decent seasons, like really good seasons in the last 25 years for the Hawks, and then you had the Dominique era. And then you traded Dominique when Michael Jordan was retired, and we were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, which was so stupid.
Yeah, at least we're not like the Wizards.
Yeah.
Like, what's the most relevant thing that happened to them? Like,
they lost
to Javaris Crittenton brought a Javaris gun Crittenton. Into the locker room.
Yeah. Oh, that was Gilbert Arenas.
Or was that Gil? Maybe, I think he pulled it on Javaris.
Oh, Crittenton. Okay, pulled it on Javaris. Yeah. And then you had the Wizards almost beat us in the Eastern.
Oh, yeah. They've almost beat us a lot. Yeah. So that's probably the most relevant thing for them.
No, sure. I mean, the Hornets suck every year. Like, you know, at least you're not the Hornets.
Yeah, they blew it with Anthony Davis. They blew it with who's the guy who's there that's fat now? That we should trade for.
You're talking about the Pelicans.
Same team, right?
No, the Hornets are back in Charlotte now.
Adam. Oh, you're talking about that franchise. The franchise.
Overall Charlotte franchise.
I was thinking of the city.
Oh, sorry. I was talking about the Charlotte.
So New Bobcats Orleans basketball, Hornets. No good.
New Orleans is pretty good this year.
Are they?
Yeah.
I'm not up to speed.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Got it.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram's good. Zion's playing better.
Charlotte. So the Bobcats.
The Bobcats / Hornets.
Got it.
Yeah. They are terrible every year.
Emeka Okafor.
Emeka Okafor.
Sean May.
Sean May. Who is the other... Who is the guy with the bangs from Gonzaga?
Oh, Adam Morrison.
Adam Morrison, yeah.
Of course.
It was like all of like the... It was interesting. It was like all these like great college players would always go to the Bobcats, and they would never be any good in the NBA.
I mean, Charlotte's just a loser city for sports, man. Like,
it really is.
They need to get rid of...
I hope Cousin Chipper's listening to this one.
I mean, look at what they did like with the number one pick last year.
But in
Bryce Young.
In fairness to them.
And then they traded.
Wouldn't you want Bryce Young based, not now.
But over any of the top three quarterbacks now?
Not now. So. Not now. I'm talking about at the time. Do you think that was, they went for broke and now they're broke.
That's fine. I mean, they got a terrible, like,
you the
think
worst
we,
owner.
You think we have a bad owner. Well, we have a good owner.
We have a good owner in the sense that he's an asshole.
They have a terrible owner.
He's the worst possible owner. He's like a new version of Dan Snyder without the sexual assault. Right. Supposedly, we don't know anything about David Tepper, but yeah, that's where they are. At least our owner's a benevolent man. He's a good guy as far as we can tell. He just makes bad football decisions.
Well, they have freaking Michael Jordan as the owner of that basketball team, and he's been terrible.
Yeah, and now he's sold part of his share.
They don't even have a baseball team.
They don't have a baseball
team. So we got Charlotte beat.
We got Charlotte by the balls.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's your episode of Atlanta Zone. We could ramble on about this all night.
Charlotte.
But we will sign off and bid you farewell. Until next week, rise up for the A, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitamnus it.
Hospitamnus it.